Coppell's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.
Welcome to the Worcester Report, a program of stories, Christian devotions, and music. Broadcast on CWCP, Coppell's Western Cape Radio.
South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God. South Africa, turn back to God.
You're listening to the Worcester Reports on CWCP Radio, and my name is Tony Coppell. 2 weeks ago, we broadcast an interview with Linda Timmerman, the co-founder of Rodlins, a very well-known technical store, computers, printing, copying, here in Worcester, and their co-store, PC Parts. Today, maybe you could call it the power behind the throne, I don't know, but we're going to be talking with Rodney Timmerman. You get it? Rodlins, Rod and Lynn. Rodney has a powerful story to tell of how he came to be a Christian man. Today I have the honor of talking to the co-owner of Rodlins. Now, those of you who listened on the 19th of September will have met his wife, Linda, and we talked about the company, Rodlins, here in Worcester. But we're not going to talk about that this time. As I promised you on that program, if you were listening really hard, this is about Rodney, her husband, himself, and his journey of faith. Rodney, welcome to CWCP Radio.
Thank you very much.
Now, I've heard from your wife, and I know it to be true, that you're someone who's passionate about your faith and about Jesus. Mm. So, because our listeners love hearing testimonials and the stories of people coming to faith, what's your story? Go back as far as you like and tell us how it
well,
happened
my story,
to you.
My story is that we moved from Johannesburg. My mother brought us from Johannesburg to Pietermaritzburg because my father was an alcoholic. And when he phoned her and said he disappeared, and then he phoned her and said that she must meet him on the Maritzburg station because he's found a place for us to stay. And that he'll meet us there. So it was myself, the youngest of nine children, my brother, who was 10 years older than me, and my sister, who was 4 years older than me. And we got to the Pietermaritzburg station, and there was no father. And we were screaming like little children do, and an old man walked past, and he asked my mother, what we're doing? And my mother said, well, my husband was supposed to have met me here, but he hasn't turned up. So he said, madam, I've got a house with a flat in it that you can put your children in and you can come and stay there. So we went there, and he was a funny old guy. He used to cut his hedge every Saturday and sing at the top of his voice. Only today, I don't know what he was singing. And he wasn't out to get my mother because he had his own girlfriend. But at the same time, my mother was she was a Catholic lady, and she met some people because she started working she had to work on her own at a laundry in the Maritzburg Mountains, and so I used to go home to an empty house, you know, every day, and eventually my brother got married, so it was just my sister and I, and the children took me to the playground when I was 9 years old and gave me my first cigarette, and then I couldn't do maths. And I failed my standard six. And so I said to my mother, I think you must let me go and work now. So I got a job on the railways, on the buses, as a mechanic. And when I walked into the place, there was a guy sitting on a bunch of tires. And he said to me, hello, I'm Michael, what's your name? I said, I'm Rodney. And he said, well, what are you doing tonight? I said, I don't know. So he said, well, let's go for a draw. And he took me out with him to the nearest bar, the pub, and he gave me my first vodka and sparkling lemon. I was 15 years old. And that's when I started drinking. And then I got involved with one day my friends and I were walking down the road in Chapel Street in Pietermaritzburg. and there was a guy sitting sitting in the shop, and he was preaching. He was a hippie. I grew up in the hippie days, and he was preaching the gospel, and he sat me down in front of him, and he told me that I needed Jesus. And I walked out of there, and I said to my friends, these people are stupid, these Christians. He thinks that I'm going to follow Jesus. But what happened also was, like I said, we were involved in a church. And then I kind of lose my way there. But then eventually my mother she went to Johannesburg, and I stayed in a boarding house there. And there was an old man that lived next door to me in his room. We were in a room next door to me. And he was watching me because I was sleeping around, and I was swearing, and I was drinking. I used to go to the bar every Friday night and drink until 11. And then every Saturday I used to go to the bar again at 10 o'clock and drink until 11 at night. And that's how it happened. But this old man, he was watching me. He checked me out. And every now and again he would come to my door, would knock on my door, and he would pass me a tract. Okay, so I would take from the tract, and we'll take the tract. But because I was always at work, I never stayed away from work, I used to read the tract in the week. But on the weekends, I was back in the pub. And, so the Monday, I'd been drinking the whole weekend, but I couldn't get drunk. And I was always at work every day, but the Monday, I stayed away from work, and I went to the bar. And I was sitting in the bar the whole day, and I couldn't get drunk. And there was a mirror. All the pubs have got mirrors in them. Now, my brothers and sisters, you know, I was the baby, but they always used to say to me, you're going to be just like your father one day. You're going to end up in the gutter. Because that's my father basically ended up in the gutter. He was an alcoholic. And I looked in the mirror. That's why they've got mirrors in bars, so that people can see how stupid they are while they mess their lives up. And I looked in the mirror and I said to myself, you have arrived, you are in the gutter. And I went, I got up and I ran home and I knocked on Uncle George's door and I said to him, I've got a problem. And he put me on my knees and he prayed the blood of Jesus over me. And I thought, yuck, I don't want any blood over me. But then on 2 days later, I don't know if you ever heard of Michael Cassidy.
Yeah.
Michael Cassidy was preaching in Peter Maritzburg at the showgrounds, and Uncle George took me there, and he said to him, and he took me there, and then Michael Cassidy preached. The sermon's name was Heaven or Hell at Home, and I've never forgotten that title. I got hold of him, someone that knew him about 6-8 months ago, and phoned and asked how he was, and he said, no, Michael Cassidy's very, very, very sick man, but I'll tell him that you phoned. Amazing, eh? Anyway, so I went into this tent, and there was a lady called Renee Lowe. She was a pastor. And I walked in one person, and I walked out another person. God set me free from the drinking, the smoking, the swearing, the sleeping around, the whole lot in 10 minutes. But, there's always a but. The Bible says go and make disciples, not converts. And I went in there, and 6 weeks later, I got a bit of flu. Now, remember, I stayed less than a kilometer away from the bar I used to drink in. And I got a bit of a cold, and I decided to go and get myself a drink, because that's what healed colds, was a little bit of dope. And on my way, every 5 or 6 steps I took, I started shaking like I couldn't walk. I was just shaking in on the way there. But I overcame it, and I walked into the bar, and I started drinking again. But the difference was, I was drinking, but I was telling everyone about Jesus. And a year later, I went to a friend of mine on a Saturday morning with a 6-pack of beer. And I knocked on his door, and he opened the door. He said, what do you want? I said, I brought us a dope. He said, you are a hypocrite. I said, why? He said, can you come to the bar on a Friday night? You drink yourself drunk. And then you tell us about this Jesus of yours. Now, it's interesting that at least 2 people that I used to minister to became Christians because of my ministry in the bar. And he said to me, I don't want your dope. Get out of here. You know? And I stepped onto the pavement, and this is what God said to me as clearly as I'm talking to you. He said, Rodney, I'm giving you a choice now. You can go left or you can go right. But if you go left, I'm washing my hands of you. And I said, Lord, I choose to go right. And that Friday I couldn't go to the pub, so I went and had supper in the dining room. And there was a guy that used to work in Durban, but he used to work in Maritzburg, and he lived in Durban. And he came to me, and he was sitting in the dining room with me. And he said to me, "What are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be in the pub?" I said, "No." I said, "God spoke to me, and he gave me a warning, and he told me I can choose left or right. But if I go left, he's washing his hands." So he said to me, "You know what, Rodney?" He said, I'm a part of a little fellowship group on a Friday, and we get together and we share and we pray for each other. And then when we finish, I go home to Durban. So why don't you join us?" And those people, they walked a road with me. They started walking a road with me. And I was in a huge church in Pietermaritzburg, but no one spoke to me. There was no one to talk to me because it was too big. There's only one lady that spoke to me, and that's because I sat in a chair. In that church, you used to buy your chairs. So you sat in the same place, and I sat in her chair. So I got talking to her. And then I thought, this is crazy. I want to meet people. And I looked in the phone book, and there was Assemblies of God Church. And I phoned them, and I said, "Look, I'm looking for a place to fellowship." And the pastor, or one of the elders, he said, "Well, Rodney, come and join us." So I went and joined them. And I stayed. The pastor used to get up on a Sunday morning and say, "Has anybody got a word?" And I was always the first one in the pulpit. Because I would read through the Bible the whole week, and then I would get a message, and I'd stand in the pulpit. And the one time I preached a message, and we had a German guy in the church, and when I was finished, he got up, he said, "I don't agree with a Rodney." So I met him afterwards. I said, "You might not agree with a Rodney, but I believe that what I said was the truth." So, we went on like that. And then eventually, what happened after that? Yeah, I went to Israel because our pastor was pro-Israel, and I spent a year in Israel. And after I got saved, I begged for a wife for 10 years, but nothing happened. And I went to Israel, and I met a South African girl there who I believe, after I came home, I was told that she really liked me. But it was amazing because she was very sick and she couldn't have children. But anyway, I got on the plane to come home because we went there for a year. We worked on a kibbutz. It was all team of us from different countries. And on the way home, I said to God, "I will never ask you for a wife again. I'll become a missionary for the rest of my life, and I'll serve you." And I got off the plane, and my friends were waiting at the airport, and they said, "We've got a wife for you." That was in Durban. I said, "I don't want a wife. I just told God I don't want a wife." And they said, "This is your wife." Now, when I was in Israel, a team came from our church, and they did a tour, and I joined them for a day. Now, when I was in the church, I used to sing. I used to play the guitar and sing at for the worship time. And what they did in the bus, they took photos of me singing, because the guy that I used to sing with, he came with on that tour, and they took photos, and then they brought it back to Durban. Of course, I had moved from Durban, from Maritzburg to Durban, because my brother got me a job in the army in Durban. So that's why I had moved there. And then, of course, someone gave me trouble in the army, and I said, "I'm not prepared to live this kind of life." Because what happened was I was talking to my leader in the army, and when I get upset, I get a loud voice. And I said to him, "You've got to stop letting these people walk all over you." And the sergeant major walked in there, and he started swearing at me. And when he walked out, I said to this guy, "My 5 years are up, and I'm leaving. I'm not prepared to put up with this nonsense." And I told my brother that I had resigned, and he said, "You'll never make it out there." I said, "Robert, you watch me. You just check me out." And I got out of there, and then I got into a church as well. And I got myself another job. But then I got involved, and I was talking about my wife, and so they made a photo, and three people sat in the church when they showed it to, and said, "There's Linda's husband." And when I landed in Durban, my friends met me at the airport. They said, "We've got a wife for you." I said, "I don't want a wife. Just told God I don't want a wife. This is your wife." 7 months later, we were married, and we've been together ever since. Yeah. So that's my story. And then, of course, we became missionaries for 9 years. We worked YWAM for nine years. And then we joined another organization.
Your story is extraordinary because it seems as if the Lord had his eyes on you from quite a way back.
I would say so, yeah.
And he brought you into the fold in an unusual way,
Let me tell you another story I've just remembered.
Yeah.
I was also one Sunday, I was in a state because of also my uncertainty, and I lived in Maritzburg at that stage, and the church that I was going to as a little boy that they took me to was a Salvation Army church, and I was walking home, and there was a Salvation Army church there, and I walked in. It was a Sunday, and I walked up to the pulpit, and where the pastor was there, and I was standing here, and I just stood there. And he came to afterwards and he said to me, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "I've just come to see, I want to talk to you about Jesus." And he started shouting and screaming at me, you know. You've got no right to come and interrupt us and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, I walked out. And then a week later, I don't quite remember where he got my address, but a week later he came to the place where I was staying in Scottsville in Maritzburg. And he knocked on the door. And he said, "I've come to speak to you." And he came and he preached the gospel to me and everything. And for the next week, I was literally going through hell. I had these two forces that were pulling me, one on this side, the other one on that side. And I didn't know what to do. And he came back on the following Sunday or Monday. And he said to me, "How are you?" And I said, "I'm not." I said, "I have been through hell since you spoke to me. So please, just get out of my life and leave me alone." And he walked out. He said, "We'll meet again one day in heaven." I thought, "Ugh, man, how stupid can you get?" And I had a friend that was living in the room next door. And when this guy left, I said, "That idiot says that he'll meet me in heaven one day." You know what I mean? Well, he's going to meet me in heaven one day. And I believe that they went back and they prayed, because that's when God started moving me in the right direction. You know? So I thought I'd add that story.
Now, we're quite a lot of years later now sitting here, and you have continued, as far as I know, to preach the gospel on every possible occasion. Tell us about that.
That's not really. You know, I was involved with the Neighborhoods Bedienen. And the Neighborhoods, I don't know if you've heard of them. They go to different businesses and they preach the gospel. And I was involved with that. Okay. I also used to preach quite a lot in the church. But I used to be involved with the Neighborhoods. But I've just turned 70 and it's a little bit hectic getting up at 6:30 in the morning to prepare yourself to go and preach. So I think I was silly, but I actually stopped it. And the only time that I'm really preaching the gospel is with the fellowship, when I get a chance to share. And then there's times when people will say things to me, and I meet them in supermarkets, in the mall, and then I'll say to them, "Do you know Jesus?" You see. And then they say yes. I say, "Well," if they say yes, I say, well, "I want you to know that he's coming soon." You know, so that's what I'm trying to share with people. Get your lives in order. The Lord is on his way. You know, but I'm not that outgoing where I, you know, but when every opportunity I get, I'll try to share the gospel. Yeah, I'm just being real now.
You two have something in common with my wife and me. Mm. We are two Christians, and I just love that communion I have with her.
Yeah.
That if there's anything I need to discuss, I can discuss it with her. She's right there. Mm. Do you two, you and Lynn, have that same
I don't know, do
attitude?
We? Yes, we do. We're mainly when we're skinnering about someone.
Yeah. I say this because I also know people, and some of them are pastors, and their spouse is not a Christian. And I feel bad for them.
Yeah. No, well, look, every morning before we get out of bed, then Linda prays for our other people that we share with and that we're at church with. And then when she gets up, then I get up and I make my tea, and then I go back into the room and I spend at least 3/4 of an hour praying for people and for staff and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but she... often when we in here and we sit run into a problem, then she takes me by the hand and I say, right, let's pray. And she does most of the praying.
Today, would you think of yourself as an intercessor or an evangelist? Which would you think would be the main
area? I think probably intercessor. Yeah, I'm being real with you. You know, I like to pray for people and ask God to touch their lives. I even pray that he'd help me to get my printers fixed. You know, and how many times has he answered that one?
So although nowadays you're primarily an intercessor, I'm interested to hear your views on evangelism as a practice. Some evangelism is done in one way, some evangelism is done in another way. If you were giving a talk on evangelism to me or to an audience, what do you think, what kind of evangelism do you think is most effective in getting the word across to people?
I'm not sure I can answer that. I think the only real way you can be a real true evangelist is if you're living what you know, people, it's important that people can see Christ in you. I think for me that's very important, because I don't believe every Christian is an evangelist. You know, we've got different gifts, we've got the tongues, we've got all this kind of, and there's a lot of controversy about that, and there's a lot of those gifts that have been removed already, you know, that are not necessary, if I may put it that way. But I do believe that the way to evangelize is that people can see Christ in us, you know, because there's a lot of hypocrites out there. They've got this, I'm a Christian, but they're not living it. You know, I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, and we're living in a time when, for political reasons in many countries, they are taking talk about the Christian faith out of schools.
That's right. Yeah. I'm studying that as well.
And it seems to me that there's a real danger that South Africa could go the way that it's gone in Canada and is going in North America, where children never get to hear the gospel because their parents don't say anything.
Yeah.
In fact, their parents never heard it. That suggests to me that evangelism is becoming more and more important, certainly in a family environment. Would you agree with me?
Yes, yeah. Mm.
What would happen, for example, if for a generation parents don't tell their children about Jesus?
Well, I think that we might have a problem, if I can just put it that way. You see, there's also some children who are not interested in
the
gospel. Yeah.
Yes.
See, but you can't force things down people's throats.
Yeah. Certainly not in your own family.
No, you can't. But what we do is we pray continuously that God will do a work.
Let's fantasize for a moment. If everybody in South Africa had a good understanding and practiced the Christian faith, what would that do to South Africa?
It would be amazing. It would be amazing if they practiced and lived it. I'm sure you've got the same eyes as me. You can see there's a huge difference taking place in this country. Even in this little town, there's major changes taking place. There's a lot of hatred. You know, you can actually see it in people's eyes. And what I'm doing is I'm doing my utmost. I walk past them, I greet them, I smile. You know what I mean? It's very, very difficult, but the fact is that South Africa is heading for major problems unless God intervenes. This country is in trouble, but the world is in trouble. You know? I mean, look at what's happening in Israel. They're murdering Jews all over the world now. Why? Because God is coming to Israel. And that, what I say to people is the battle is not against Islam and Judaism. The battle is against God and Satan, or between God and Satan. But there's huge changes taking place. I mean, I'm reading about it every night, you know, and trusting God that we will see a miracle. The wonderful thing is that there is a revival taking place worldwide. People are turning to Christ. In Iran, for instance, the people are living in caves now, but they are serving God, you know. So there are good news, you know. When I read the prophecies, they say, this is the bad news. But this is the good news. The good news is that Christ is coming back and that there are thousands of people coming to Christ. Even in Israel, the people are coming to Christ in their hundreds. And a lot of people are going back to Israel. I said to my wife yesterday, I would like to go to Israel and live there again. It's a beautiful, they're fantastic people. You know, I mean, I went there, and when I flew the first time, I went on a tour. And I got to the top, and there was the air hostess, because we flew LL, and there was an air hostess, and she spoke Hebrew to me. And I said, what? She said, what? You're not Jewish? I said, no, I'm not Jewish. I'm South African. But it's possibly does exist that there is Jewish in my family, you know, because I got papers that possibly our name was changed. But I mean, when I was in Israel, I kept on walking into a woman when they took us from the airport to the kibbutz we were in, I nearly died because they were driving on the wrong side of the road, you know. And then I kept on walking into a woman in the kibbutz, and she said, why do you keep walking into me? I said, I don't know. She said, where do you come from? I said, I come from South Africa. Ah, yes, you people drive on the wrong side of the road. But they are fantastic people. I mean, I had a couple. Each one of us had to be adopted by a family, you know, because we were part of the family. And I was adopted by a couple, an Israeli couple. So I've had a bit of experience out there. But even in Israel, I mean, the first day I went there, I went into a tea room. And I spoke about Jesus, and I tell you what, they threw me out of there, boy, because we weren't allowed to speak about Jesus when we went to those tours. And I just decided I'm going to speak about Jesus, you know. But I also, interestingly enough, I ran a Bible study there for the team that we were in. You know, I said to them, let's have a Bible study. But also when Linda and I stayed down in Davet, we used to go to the farms, and she would preach to the children and I would preach to the adults. We had a lot of fun there, you know, and a lot of ministry.
Yeah. Rodney Timmerman, thank you very much indeed. Businessman, intercessor, preacher, evangelist, and an extraordinary story of how the Lord brought you into the fold.
Yeah,
thank you for talking to us.
It's a pleasure.
God bless you.
worship you. I worship you. You are here turning lives around. I worship you. I worship you. Darkness, that is who you are. Yeah, way maker, miracle walker, promise keeper, light in the darkness. My God, that is who you are. You wipe away all tears, you mend the broken heart. You're the answer to it all, Jesus. You wipe away all tears, you mend the broken heart. You're the answer to it all, to it all, Jesus. Yeah. Way make miracle worker, promise keeper. I worship you. You are here meeting every need. I worship you. I worship you. Oh, de motion day, I'm a
Sinach, the Nigerian gospel singer, who was included in the 2019 100 Most Reputable People on Earth, and Michael J. Smith's song, Waymaker. Every so often we have broadcast a chapter from the book Legacy by Jasper Klote, and today we are up to chapter 7. Those of you who've been following this program have therefore got a pretty good idea what this book is all about. It is detailed instructions on how you can start on the journey that can involve your complete family, your children, and their children. And following the principles that Jasper has outlined, you can expect to see that dynasty prosper. He studied families who have been financially successful for numbers of generations, and he put it all down in the book Legacy. He's the founder of GIG, Generational Inheritance Group, which has chapters in many cities in South Africa, allowing individuals to learn about entrepreneurship and how to build businesses. Legacy. Chapter 7, Recalibrating Your Legacy Target Objectives. Here's how three-generational goal setting becomes an enjoyable process. Much has been written on this topic already. In this chapter, we will do a quick revisit to the current understanding of goal setting from a one-generational perspective, and then we will conclude with a new three-generational perspective. For years, the story has been told by motivational speakers about a university study on a graduating class on goal setting. They were asked about their goals for their lives, and only 3% had clear written down goals. In a follow-up study 20 years later,
The wealth of this 3% was more than 90% of the combined wealth of the rest of the group, with no written down goals. When some academics from the Dominican University could not find the actual study that this story referred to, they then conducted a new study in 2012, which involved 267 participants ranging in age from 23 to 72. Only 149 completed the study, of which 37 were males and 112 females. They further represented a cross-section of cultures from the USA, England, India, Australia, Belgium, and Japan, with participants representing a variety of careers and ranging from business owners and management to employees. The study ran for 4 weeks and tested the theory of whether people who had written down goals and a clear action plan and who made themselves accountable on the achievement of their goals to a friend will have an advantage over people who merely thought about their goals. The research proved the original theory, and the group who merely thought about their goals significantly underperformed versus the group that had written goals and action plans and who were held accountable for the achievement of their goals. When one takes aim at a close object with a laser pointer, it's almost impossible to miss. The further the object that you aim for is, however, the better your aim must be and the more still your hand must be. This analogy is very true when it comes to goal setting. Goal setting is about aiming at something in the future. Three-generational goal setting is taking aim at the generation of your children's children, 60 years beyond your death. In the previous chapter, we discussed the 8 areas of your life that need to stay in balance. In this first part, we will show you how to set meaningful goals and action plans in each of those areas. The 8 areas are 1, physical, 2, social investment, 3, wealth, financial, 4, mental, intellect, 5, business, career, 6, family, relationship, 7, spiritual, 8, restoration, fun. The process of goal setting is best described in the book Map for Life. The essence of the process is: Step 1. For each of the areas under the heading short-term needs, medium-term wants, and long-term dreams, write down all your goals that come to your mind. The definition of short-term is anything you need to have, be, or do within the next 6 to 12 months. It normally doesn't require lots of money, and a good way to get your mind going on this is to ask yourself, what would I be able to do, have, or be if someone unexpectedly gives me an amount of money equal to what I normally need for my monthly budget? Examples of short-term needs are: pay school fees, replace the washing machine, fix the car. The definition of medium term is, you don't need it, but it would be nice to have. Something you want. The time frame for this is something you want within the next 1 to 5 years. It probably requires more money than what you need for your short-term goals, and a good way to think on this is to ask yourself, what would I be able to do, have, or be if someone unexpectedly gives me an amount of money equal to 1 year's income over and above my current monthly budget? Examples of medium-term wants are: buy a new car, take my family on a cruise, pay off my house, or buy a house. The definition of long-term is, the key word is dreams, and the time frame is 5 years plus. You probably already gave up on it, and with your current means, it is impossible to achieve. Yet every now and then, you catch yourself daydreaming and thinking, if I could win the lotto, or suddenly inherit a lot of money, what would I be able to do, have, or be? What if I could earn my annual income every month for the rest of my life? How would this change the way I live, be, or do things? In terms of your long-term goals, the time period would be 5 years plus. Goals must adhere to the SMART system. S, specific, significant, and stretching. M, measurable, meaningful, motivational. A, agreed upon, attainable, achievable, acceptable, action-oriented. R, realistic, relevant, reasonable, rewarding, results-oriented. T, time-based, time-bound, timely, tangible, trackable. Create your own dream chart. Only write down goals that you can represent with a picture. Create, download from the internet, or cut out pictures from magazines on all the goals you have written down. Paste it on a large sheet of paper under the headings short, medium, and long. Or, start a dream book by getting a book of plastic pockets, paste your pictures on sheets of A4 paper, and then place your short-term goals in the first part of the book, the medium-term goals in the middle, and the long-term goals in the last section. The importance of creating your own dream book is best illustrated with the following story. Imagine you wake up one day and find yourself standing next to a river. The landscape around you is uninhabitable. Nothing grows there. If you stay where you are, you will die of hunger. In front of you is a broad, raging river in flood. You see tree trunks and dead animals floating down. You are scared. You can't stay where you are, but you are also scared to get into the water and swim to the other side. Then you look across the river. There you see a beautiful scene where the you of the future is living as in your dream. Everything around the you of the future is beautiful. Food and resources are plentiful, and everyone is happy. You need to get there, but how? You can jump into the river and swim as best you can, but if you survive the swim, the strength of the flood will have carried you downstream and you don't know where you will end up. This is exactly how most people live their lives. They jump into the river of life and do their best to survive while they float to wherever the river might take them. When life spews them out at 65, they find themselves at a place they do not want to be, but can do little about it. Now imagine as you watch the you of the future, you see that next to you is a strong tree and a long coil of rope. The you of the future then attaches the rope to the tree and throws the other end across the river to where you stand. When you tie the rope around you, you notice that in the rope are knots that will give you a strong grip. If you now get into the river, the force of the water will still try and sweep you downstream, but all you need to do is to fight the current and pull yourself forward, one knot at a time. You may still be knocked out by floating debris and obstacles and will have to fight to stay above the water, but before you know it, you will have crossed the river and get to the exact spot where you meet up with the you of the future. You have become you. The piece of rope closest to you represents the short term, and the knots in the rope your short term goals. The same goes for the middle and last parts of the rope. Without your taking this exercise seriously and doing your dream book and revisiting it regularly, you are not tying knots in your rope. Your rope is not attached to yourself or the tree next to the you of the future, and you will have no hope of achieving your goals. Step 2. Pick up your 3 goals in each of the categories and develop a plan of action. For each of the top 3 goals in each of the categories, go through the following process. A. Write a goal statement, a concise, positive, motivating statement written as an affirmation. Example goal. Medium term. Get out of debt. goal statement, I am financially free and able to live life to the full, doing what I want, when I want, with whomever I want, as often as I want. I do it whilst enjoying an ever-increasing income from multiple income streams. B. Write down your motivation for wanting this goal. What will inspire you to finish well? Rewards for reaching this goal. Free from bondage. Able to meet all my personal and family's financial needs. Able to help others. Freedom to go anywhere and do anything. Live a life of abundance and prosperity. Consequences if I don't reach this goal. Getting deeper into debt. Relationship problems as a result of over-indebtedness. Poor quality of life. Feeling a failure. Might end up in bankruptcy. C. Make a list of the obstacles that can stop you from reaching this goal. External, the things or people you blame. The banks keep on raising the interest rate. My parents were poor and never left me any money. My boss doesn't pay me enough. I'm paying too much in taxes. The government should make laws that stop creditors from harassing me. Internal, habitual behavior or fears. I buy things I don't need, impulse buying. I feel inferior and buy things to impress others. I have a lack mentality and always feel poor. I believe money is evil. I believe rich people are either lucky or dishonest. D. Make a list of the skills or knowledge that you would require accomplishing this goal. To be acquired, provided by others. Financial literacy course. Entrepreneurial course. Ideas on possible income opportunities. Available. I can do it. Do a detailed budget. Identify expenses that can be reduced and do it. E. Association network. Who has done this before? Specific individuals. Read biography on Warren Buffett. Susie, who just came out of debt, review after 2 years. Groups, organizations, companies that can help. New Deal Debt Counselors, www.newdealdc.co.za. My Gig Wealth Coach. F. Measurement. How will you know when you've reached your goal? Description. The bank will send me the copy of the title deed on the property. My last car statement will read nil balance. No more window envelopes from any creditor. I have saved $10,000 in my Gig LoanLink share account. www.gig.coop. Reward. Go on a cruise with my wife. Take out my close friends for a dinner at a classy restaurant. Cut up all my credit and store cards. G. Set a target date. H. Sign it as an agreement with yourself and let your spouse co-sign. Step 3. Do an action plan. Detailed actions to be taken. Now imagine a table with rows and columns. The column headings are Task Description, Info, Planned, Actual. Under Info, there are two subcolumns, RESP, which means Responsible for the Action, and Time, which means Estimated Time Needed to Complete the Action. Under Planned, there are two subcolumns, Start and End. Under Actual, there are two subcolumns, Start and End. In the first column, Task Description, are the following row names. Row 1. List all my debts. Row 2. Prepare a get-out-of-debt plan. Row 3. Make an appointment with debt counselor. Row 4. Go through debt counseling process. Row 5. Start saving. Row 6. Increase income. Talk to wealth coach. Row 7. Make list of assets that can be sold. Row 8. Arrange for sale of assets. Row 9. Get an accountability partner. Row 10. Get a picture of a cruise and put on fridge. And then list under the sub-columns, RESP, time, start, and end, the responsibilities. For example, under alongside list all my debts, the responsibility would be me, the time would be one day, start would be one stroke one, end would be one stroke one, and continue that process for the complete table. Three generational goal setting. Few people can wrap their mind around events that will happen in the future, but upon which we need to act today. In three generational goal setting, short term is defined as completing the journey from struggle to significance, but it may have a time frame of 5 to 30 years. Significance, medium term, is what happens after you've reached your success goals, 3 or more sustainable income streams, and happens for the remainder of your life. The time spent in this period and the things you accomplish in this period is what will determine the legacy footprint you will leave after your death. Legacy is your new long term. The following concept illustrates the difference in time perspective from a one generational mindset compared with a three generational mindset when it comes to goal setting. Both time perspectives start with an adult life of 20 years. In the one generational mindset, running just 50 years, there are three segments: long term, 5 years plus, medium term, 3 to 5 years, and short term, 6 to 12 months. In the three generational mindset, the first segment, running out to 50 years, has three segments: struggle, stability, and success. Running out to 80 years, significance. And beyond that, running out to 3 full generations, legacy. To wrap your mind around this new way of thinking, working through the following exercises will help you greatly. The three generational goal setting process. This process can be summarized in 8 steps. Step 1. Under short-term struggles, do a list of struggle statements. Step 2. Under short-term stability, do a list of stability statements. Step 3. Under short-term success, list all the possible income streams you would like to get going. Step 4. Under medium term, significance, list everything that will give you a sense of significance. Step 5. Under long term, legacy, write a legacy statement. Step 6. Capture all of the above in an essay to yourself. Step 7. Read the essay loud to yourself every morning before you start your day and every evening before going to bed. Step 8. Keep adjusting your essay throughout your life as you start to achieve your goals and your circumstances change. Let's go through these steps in more detail. Step 1. Short-term struggle statements. When you find yourself in a state of struggle, you can't think clearly. You become reactionary in your actions and are easily manipulated by the one generational system. Your heightened emotional state makes you do irrational things like therapeutic shopping on credit, giving up on that savings plan when you start thinking, what's the use? I'll never get out of my mess. Quitting your studies that would have enabled you to be of more value to society and through which you could have increased your income long term. Instead, you took a job that meets an immediate need, but in which you will still be stuck by the time you retire. Your mind is whirling around negative thoughts that you can't clearly define, but the overall effect is one of feeling doomed. The first thing you must do is to take these negative thoughts captive and expose them to the light of reason and reality. You need to become your own best counselor. Search deep inside yourself and ask yourself questions such as, what is stealing my joy now? What is draining me emotionally? What do I find myself worrying about most of the times? These thoughts can be about things material, needed for finances, health, relationships, or spiritual, or anything else. The important thing is that it is a current cause of concern for you. Analyze these thoughts and try and find words for each of them and write them down as struggle statements, putting your worry and anxiety into words. Break it down into its smallest quantifiable component. Your mind can't handle big unsolvable problems until you've broken it down into manageable chunks. Example. Don't say, I struggle because of a lack of money. Rather be specific and break it down into the various things you need the money for. Better example. I struggle with not being able to pay school fees, with not being able to pay my monthly rent, with not being able to pay my credit card debt. Unpack your entire world of inner turmoil through this process. Tell your mind that once a thought has been captured on paper, you will no longer be anxious about it, but you will put your mind to work to find solutions. See an example of a struggle statement below. I struggle, A, with transport, not having a car. B, with time management and feeling guilty and overwhelmed with everything that needs to get done. C, to pay school fees. Step 2. Short-term, stability statements. This is where you take control of the struggle mind state and start focusing it on potential solutions. You do this by taking the negative struggle statement and ask yourself, in terms of this specific situation, what will make me feel more stable? Do it now with all the struggle statements you wrote down. See an example of a stability statement below. I will feel more stable when A. I have my own car. Now your mind can go to work on deciding the type of car, how you will be able to afford it, etc. B. I plan my time, set priorities, and follow a diary so that I can have a more balanced life yet achieve my goals. C. I can increase my income to the point that I can pay the school fees a year in advance, which now opens your mind to seriously look for additional income streams. Step 3. Short-term. Success statements. Now that you've attended to the emotional part of getting ready for significance, you will have to identify the income streams that will help you get there and stay there. Remember that in generational inheritance, we define success as having three or more different income streams. This in turn gives you choices. It is understandable that you may be devoting 80% or more of your own energy to the income stream that fulfills you in terms of passion and interest, but you will still have to train your mind to develop alternative income streams. You don't have to be the personal driver behind these other income streams, and can do it via investments or becoming a shareholder in someone else's business. In writing your income statement, the focus is more on defining the following. The type stroke source of income. The starting point when you will know that this income stream is sustainable and can grow in the future. Wrong example. I will be successful when I earn $100,000 per month from rental properties. If you are an existing successful property developer and already earn this from your property portfolio, then it will be a correct statement. But if you are not yet in property and dream of starting a rental portfolio, and in your first transaction manage to put a deal together where you buy the property, put in a tenant, and after all costs are deducted, end up with a positive cash flow of $1, you have successfully opened up a sustainable new income stream for yourself. Correct example. I will be successful when I earn a surplus of $1 or more from my first rental property deal. Now that you have opened up this income stream, you will continue to add more properties and increase the cash flow from the existing ones, but in terms of achievement, you are already successful. You are starting to give yourself choices. Success is therefore not defined in the amount of earnings from an income stream, but the fact that it is a surplus and sustainable. Step 4. Medium term. Significance. Think on things that will give your life meaning and make you feel significant. When will you feel good about yourself? What do you see yourself doing when you no longer have to worry about time or money? Write down as many of these as you can think of. Remember that your significance, your purpose for being on earth, will always play out in a way that brings fulfillment to you and be of benefit to your community and society at large. You will also find that you will be able to do this from a position of peace and rest, and not anxiety and stress. Example, I will feel significant when I have the time and money to travel and see the world, I can attend the various trade shows on the latest cutting-edge technology to see if there may be new business opportunities, I'm in a position to keep on developing more sustainable businesses so that I can keep on growing more sustainable employment opportunities for people. I can write books and do talks around the world on the lessons I've learned about the generational inheritance philosophy. Step 5. Long-term legacy. What you do in terms of your significance will determine the legacy footprint that you will leave after your death. This is what you will be remembered for. To be able to do this exercise, you will have to cast your mind into the future, 60 years beyond your death. Imagine that you and your children have already finished your work here on earth and are now in heaven where all is fun and laughter. Imagine that in heaven there is a window from where you can see what is happening on earth and specifically where it concerns your family and community that you've left behind. Assume that during your life here on earth, you have taken the steps to become the founding parent of your family dynasty, and although it was rough in the beginning years, you succeeded and have started many sustainable businesses and organizations. You spent the last years of your life on earth in significance and made sure you successfully transferred leadership of these businesses and organizations to the right successors. Now you and your children look down from that window in heaven at the generation of your grandchildren and their descendants. Describe what you see. Example, I see a community that I touched with my life, where my grandchildren and their families have continued to build on the businesses, wealth, and philosophy that were started by me and my children, and now they are all fulfilling leadership positions in their communities. The gig and community chamber of commerce movement have penetrated every country and industry, and people are now living their lives according to the gig message of building for generations to come. The gig philosophy is now part of the school curriculum, and the economy is now built on generational products and services. Step 6. Capture all the above into an essay to yourself. Congratulations! You have just completed your working notes from which you will now write your generational inheritance declaration. This declaration will be done in the form of an essay where the you of the future will be encouraging the you of the present to take heart and continue the journey. Imagine the you of the future looking back from across the river. You have just finished putting on the rope of your goals and are getting ready to jump into this river, coming down in flood. The water is cold, and there are obstacles floating that can hurt you. You are filled with anxiety and self-doubts, yet you know you can't stay here. Then you look across the river, and there the you of the future is smiling at you, and you hear him or her encouraging you with the following words. Hi. Put your name in here. Remember when we used to struggle? List all the struggle you currently experience. Then we took action, joined gig, and list all the actions you took that gave you a sense of stability. Here I am today, successful and earning money from the following sources. List all your possible income streams and how much, in today's money, you would like to earn from them. Now that I'm stable and successful, I can be significant for the rest of my life by list all the things you would be, do, or have that will make you feel significant. I know that by staying committed to my creation purpose and the calling to be the founding parent of my family dynasty, my legacy will consist of list all your legacy items. This essay will be a very personal thing that you will have to do. As you go through this exercise to prepare the content for your essay of declaration, do it prayerfully and imagine yourself sitting before your Creator and He share with you His plan and purpose in designing you. Only use words and write things that you feel is true for you. Step 7. Read the essay loud to yourself every morning before you start your day and every evening before going to bed. Once this essay is written, you will have to program your own mind, soul, and spirit with the information of this new you, the founding parent of your family dynasty. You do this by making a hard copy of your declaration and reading it out aloud to yourself every morning before you start your day, and the last thing you do every night before you go to bed. In doing this, you are laying down the tracks on which the train of your life and career will run while you are living your life. It will also save you a lot of wasted time and resources. When, daily, you are confronted by choices, potential strategic relationships, and perceived opportunities, it will be easy for you to discern which of them are aligned to your own destiny and which of them will distract you from your destiny. If you consistently program yourself daily, you will put in motion the law of attraction, which will bring strategic relationships, resources, and opportunities your way that will accelerate the speed at which you will move from struggle to significance and enhance the impact you will be able to make in your lifetime. Step 8. Keep adjusting your essay throughout your life as you start to achieve your goals and your circumstances change. As you start to do this daily, your circumstances will change, and after a while you may find that there are things in your essay that have already been completed and now no longer motivates you. That is the time then to repeat this exercise and write a new essay. Enjoy the journey.
Well, that's the Worcester Reports for today. We switched the order around a little bit from normal, and Lorianne wasn't able to record A Way to Grow in God, but hopefully she'll be back next week, when I hope you'll be back as well. This is Tony Koppel signing off. Do join us again. God bless you all.
Koppel's Western Cape Radio, CWCP, broadcasting from Worcester, South Africa.